Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I am just so thrilled that you all are here taking this time to slow down and to strengthen these loving ideas in our minds. We need them. Tonight, we will be reading cameo number 26 in the back of the CE. It's called Helen and Bill's Holy Relationship. Before we do that, as we always like to begin, let's start with a brief period of meditation. So if you are able, allowing your eyes to close. We spend a lot of time up in our heads, thinking and planning. Let's consciously drop our attention down into our bodies. We run the risk as course students of sort of that unhealthy denial of the body where we're still in it, but we're sort of denying our experience as it's happening. So to counter that, let's drop in, because in the body is where we sense guidance. It's where we feel love. It's our communication device repurposed under spirit's guidance. So dropping into the body and just beginning with feeling your feet on the floor, feeling the complete soles of your feet touching the floor, or if you're lying back, whatever part of your feet happen to be touching something beneath you, just sensing that, whether it's the floor or a bed or a chair. Maybe sensing your shoes or socks, sensing your legs, your torso, your arms and shoulders, and your neck and your head. And just for a moment, dropping into your belly and noticing if you're breathing from high up in your chest or if your abdominal muscles are soft, if they are relaxed. And if your abs are tight, just simply softening them. And that simple act of just releasing any tension in the abdominal muscles can really help us step out of that shallow, anxious breath into a natural breath, just like a baby breathes with their whole belly. And already we might feel like we can rest in spirit. That simple act of just releasing any tension or tightness or constriction in the abs is almost like that willingness to just let go to spirit, to release whatever we're carrying, to place it all in Holy Spirit's arms. And just noticing your breath, how you are being breathed. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind. These are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice deep breath in while keeping that belly soft. Breathing in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Trusting that we will hear exactly what we need to hear tonight. Whatever it is that we are carrying, hopefully tonight's reading will help us be inspired to to release a little more, return to Holy Spirit a little more. So again, we are reading Cameo 26 in the CE edition. It's called Helen and Bill's Holy Relationship. It's on page 1829. And as always, for anybody who's tuning in for the first time, I read for a little bit and I'll stop and maybe share a few thoughts and open it up for comments or questions. We are conversational here, so I do welcome everyone's input and sharing. It's so much more rich that way. So here we go. Cameo 26. Helen and Bill's Holy Relationship. The text section, the beginning of the Holy Relationship, also marks the beginning of the Holy Relationship discussions in the text, which, starting here, weave through more than five chapters to the end of chapter 22. It is important to realize that these teachings on the Holy Relationship were initially directed at Helen and Bill, and thus reflect the particular history and issues of their relationship. Some of the specifics, therefore, will not apply to other holy relationships, even though the general principles will. Let's look then at the teaching that this section was giving them about their own very challenging relationship. When this section refers to, quote, the experience in which the relationship became what it is, end quote, it is referring to a very specific and important event, Helen and Bill's joining in another way. This was the holy instant in which the relationship was made holy. Here is Helen's description of that event from her autobiography. The context is conflict in their work situation. So this is from Helen's autobiography. Every evening, I went over a long list of grievances regarding Bill at home, and I have no doubt that Bill did much the same thing. It became more and more evident that the best thing for me to do was to leave my position. However, Bill and I seemed to be trapped in a relationship which, though we hated it in many ways, could not be escaped. That change came most unexpectedly. It began one afternoon in June of 1965, before Bill and I were to leave for a weekly research meeting. He had something on his mind, that much was apparent, but he found it hard to discuss. In fact, he tried unsuccessfully several times to begin. Finally, he took a deep breath, grew slightly red-faced, and delivered a speech. It was hard for him, he told me later, because the words sounded trite and sentimental even as he said them. Nor was he anticipating a particularly favorable response from me. Nevertheless, he was merely saying what he felt had to be said. He had been thinking things over and had concluded we were using the wrong approach. Our attitudes had become so negative that we could not work anything out. He had therefore decided to look at things differently. Bill proposed, quite specifically, to try out a new approach that day at the research meeting. He was not going to get angry and was determined not to attack. He was going to look for a constructive side in what the people there said and did, and was not going to focus on mistakes and point up errors. He was going to cooperate rather than compete. It was time to take a new direction. We had obviously been headed the wrong way. It was a long speech for Bill, and he spoke with unaccustomed emphasis as he delivered it. When it was over, he waited for my response in obvious discomfort. Whatever reaction he may have expected, it was not the one he got. I jumped up, told Bill with genuine conviction that he was right, and said I would try the new approach with him.
Bill and Helen both realized that they had made a tremendously important commitment, a commitment that ended up having large-scale consequences for their department. So Helen continues here. At the factual level, the whole climate of the department gradually changed. Bill worked particularly hard on the departmental problems, determined to turn hostilities into friendships. This took considerable effort on his part at first, but he did succeed eventually. Tensions lessened and antagonisms dropped away. The wrong people left, though on friendly terms, and the right ones came along almost immediately. A secure and interesting position opened up for me. Although our efforts were inconsistent and often half-hearted, there is little doubt that they showed results. The department became smooth functioning, relaxed, and efficient. So the commentary continues. They didn't need Jesus, therefore, to tell them that their joining in this new approach was significant. What he did reveal to them, however, was that there was so much more there than what they could see. In addition to its surface level significance, this event was filled with an untold spiritual significance. We can understand the significance in terms of their joining, having both spiritual content and spiritual results, both of which were largely invisible to them. The conscious content of their joining was obvious. In response to years of chronic interpersonal conflict, Bill proposed an approach that was about replacing competition, criticism, and attack with cooperation and focusing on the positive. His approach, in other words, was about how people can get along. Jesus says in our text section, however, that on an unconscious level, there was something else happening. On that deeper level, the Holy Spirit had been calling to them, and Jesus himself had been knocking on their door. Although this was surely not a very conscious experience, it couldn't have been entirely unconscious either. Years earlier, Helen had confided to her psychoanalyst that she had a recurring experience of feeling the presence of a man behind her left shoulder, trying to get her attention, which she steadfastly refused to give. The Holy Spirit's call was ultimately a call to see and treat others, and particularly each other, with love. Therefore, by joining in Bill's more loving approach, Helen and Bill were really answering his call. On a conscious level, of course, the two of them didn't even believe in the Holy Spirit. But on a deeper level, they were finally saying yes to him. That is why their apparently secular joining could be described in this way. Quote, you undertook together to invite the Holy Spirit into your relationship, end quote. It is also why Jesus could later say, quote, I was a stranger and you took me in, not knowing who I was. And I'm going to pause here before we continue. So we get some very, this background information is so relatable for me because I teach in a college graduate program, and I have filled in like temporary full-time positions before. And faculty meetings can be really rough. and I mean, like any staff meeting, perhaps anywhere in any work situation, but I just very much relate to this because I've been in that faculty role and have heard about other departments and, you know, just how it can be quite contentious. And here is this department chair, Bill, who is standing up at this faculty meeting and declaring for the first time that there's got to be another way, that he's going to start focusing on the positive and trying to, you know, not attack or get angry, and that Helen, you know, jumps up, as she says, and agrees that she would join him in this new approach. So at that moment in time, they're at a work meeting. They're not thinking about God. They're not thinking about the Holy Spirit. As it says here, they don't even believe in the Holy Spirit at that time. But that desire for a better way, that choice to find another way, an alternative way of being was the Holy Spirit and was all that the Holy Spirit needed in order to enter, to start to transform not only their relationship, but the whole work setting that they lived in. So this is a beautiful reminder to me that even though, you know, we have the language of the Course and maybe are comfortable using spiritual terminology, that the Holy Spirit's here again, and whatever you call the Holy Spirit based on wherever you're, whatever tradition you come from, maybe whatever religion somebody is, I feel like, you know, we use different terms to refer to the same spiritual beings, and the Holy Spirit is always at work, always, whether we're conscious of it or not. And that's one of the reasons why we can take a deep breath and rest and relax and know that the Holy Spirit is here. Of course, it's helpful and speeds things up when we call on the Holy Spirit and ask the Holy Spirit to come in. But the Holy Spirit is here, even at our, you know, slightest invitation, and even if it's not, even if we're not specifically calling on the Holy Spirit, just that desire for love, for a shift, for healing is enough. So I thought this was beautiful, and I like how in the commentary it refers to the spiritual content and spiritual results. There was a big shift that happened as a result of this joining, and we'll be reading more about this. But is there anybody feel moved to share or ask a question so far? Anything that stands out to you? Dave. Hi, Dave. Go for it.
Let's see. So let's see here. How do I phrase this? So we could be making progress and still not, you know, I've been working on trust for quite a while, and it doesn't seem like I'm really attaining a great deal of trust, but sure, a lot of stuff coming up. So it's when the phrase coming up for healing, it feels like there's so much stuff coming up that we're, you know, kind of drowning in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we're still making progress or not.
We are. And Dave, what you're speaking to, like the words that came to mind when you said, you know, making progress, we can make progress and have no idea that we're making progress. And at the same time, I feel like, at least in my own experience, it's safe to say that I can be my own worst evaluator. Like, because I think that I think I know how I'm doing, and I have no idea. We can tell in some ways, because of course, how we feel is an indicator. Are we feeling that inner light, that inner joy, that inner peacefulness, that happiness? But even if we're not feeling that, we can still be making progress. And even if, like, I mean, it's easy too, the ego can disguise itself and feel all sorts of happy, and yet it can be, we can be completely self-centered. So I feel like the quote that comes to mind is like, resign now as your own teacher and resign as your own evaluator. You don't have to worry about how you're doing. Your task is only that small bit of willingness. Let the Holy Spirit be the one to like worry about the rest. And there is that quote, I feel like we've talked about it not too long ago, but you judge your greatest gains as like failures, oh, yeah, and you judge your failures, or, you know, we get it all backwards. We think when we're failing, we think that we're failing when we're actually making steps. And when we think we're making steps, we're actually stepping backwards, because that's probably, you know, a judgment of the ego judging itself. So we can resign as our own evaluators and just trust that even if it seems like we're not making progress, we absolutely are, because this is so, our learning is so orchestrated. And as long as we are staying present, showing up for our lessons, staying engaged. And when I say showing up for our lessons, I mean like living life, like not hiding, you know, just being present to whatever each day brings to us, because that's our curriculum. And if we are trying to hide from our curriculum, you know, it's going to be much harder to learn. But if we're kind of diving in and saying, all right, like this, day has not been going so well, but here I am. I'm showing up again. This is our training ground. So I'm with you, Dave. Yes, we can make lots of progress and have no idea.
Perfect. I think the phrase you were thinking of is where they talk about advance and retreat.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, well, thank you.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. And for anybody who's who wants to chime in, you can just either just wave in the camera, or if you want to just take yourself off of mute, there's also a little hand option. That is right now, Mary Beth has her hand up.
Hi.
Hi.
What is the, this said, I think it was June of 1965. When was the dictation happening that Helen and Bill were taken down
originally? It started in, I think, October of that year.
Oh, wow.
It's going to say it, I'm pretty sure, in this cameo, because I feel like I just read it. So,
because I love that. I was wondering just the way that Bill, I'm thinking of this in the course, I'm relatively new to it, but there's a part about, you know, we can think when we're choosing from our right mind, from the true mind. Mm-hmm. And that's what Bill did, even though he didn't realize he was doing it, just yes. The fact of doing it is enough. And I was really struck in Helen's writing, how she used the word, Bill chose not to attack. Mm-hmm. You know, he made the choice not to attack. And I also felt a real level of surrender mm-hmm. in what Bill was saying. Like, he didn't even care how Helen was going to respond to this. He's like, I have nothing left. I'm no longer going to attack. I'm no longer going to fight. And then Helen joined in with that. And it was just so powerful spiritually. You know, seeing it, and then to hear that they don't even start receiving with the dictation and all for a few months still.
It gives me goosebumps.
It does. Me too. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary Beth. As I'm just hearing you speak, like, yeah, I'm getting goosebumps because it was June 1965 that what we just read, that occurred, June 1965. Then in a couple of pages, we're going to read how Helen had psychic experiences that summer, 1965. And it was October of that year when the voice started saying, this is A Course in Miracles, please take notes. So I'm getting, goosebumps all over that when we, what you just described about Bill, just like, it's as if Bill, I mean, he was nervous, but at the same time, he had to say this. And it was like, you know, I don't know what anybody's going to think, but I got to say this anyway. And like you're saying, that surrender, that he was just coming from his right mind and opening himself up, and Helen joined him in that, then my goodness, look what is about to happen. It's just so, so inspiring.
And even just to think of that in an academic setting like that, in academia, right. I mean, you just don't let your guard down. You just don't let it go with the flow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right.
It wasn't any, you know, intellectual decision and all that. And it worked out beautifully.
Oh, and yes, it did.
About the wrong people leaving positions and the right people being drawn in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just like we know happens.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And then that's the orchestration of it, is that we can trust, like all of us, we wouldn't be here if we didn't say yes at some point in some way to this greater, to the Holy Spirit, to this, you know, thought system beyond our own. And so we can trust that, again, we have to resign as our own evaluator and think that we have any ideas to what's going on, but it's as if everything starts to get reorchestrated and rearranged in our life. It's funny. So I've been cleaning out my home office because it's the room. The reason I have this like fake picture behind me is because it's just always a disaster. And I've been trying to clean it up. And I found, I have an old tape player and cassette tapes. One of them is a set, it's called Spiritual Madness by Carolyn Mace. And it was one of the very first spiritual audio programs that I listened to back when I was having panic attacks in college in the 90s. And she was saying in the beginning, because I started listening to it again, because I remember I probably listened to those dozens of times back then, that when we say yes to God, that's no small thing. Like literally we're asking God on a even an unconscious level to allow that which is false to fall away and to reorchestrate our mm-hmm. lives in order to support our awakening and our healing. And so the title of these tapes were Spiritual Madness, because oftentimes, you know, growth comes out of spiritual madness. But it just, this is a different form of that madness. Conflict can be madness. It's insanity. And to have this moment of recognition in that madness, that like, there's got to be another way, is that opening that invites in the Holy Spirit to start to, you know, reorchestrate and repurpose. That's really the word that I want to get to. That's allowing, that's us saying we want everything to be repurposed by Spirit to help us all to awaken. So again, thank you, Mary Beth. That was really helpful.
Oh. Corinne?
Yes.
This is Carl. And,
hi, Carl.
Hi. And it, in regards to progress, as you were just talking about, mm-hmm. I came across this quote recently, which I've been living by, and it goes as the following. There are decades when nothing happens, and then there are weeks when decades happen.
Thank you, Carl. That's great. That's so true. I think we can all relate to that. That reminds me of also the celestial speed up that I very much believe we are living lifetimes within what sometimes feels like a month. Many lifetimes within one lifetime now. That's a great quote. Thank you, Carl.
It is. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Did anybody else, Sundari, did you want to ask something? I saw you can either just take yourself off of mute if you'd like, or
yeah, here I go.
Hi,
thank you. Well, I had nothing to, a thought that had occurred to me while you were speaking was the little bit of willingness. And that's sort of where I'm at right now, just a little bit of willingness and asking, really asking God to help me come forth more, you know, and not be afraid to go for the gold in my life, you know, mm-hmm. To really go for awakening in a real way. And I guess it's step by step, but anyway, this reading that you did, it reminded me of just the coming forth with willingness to whatever extent I can, even speaking now is a little bit of willingness, you know? So that's it. So thanks.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Sundari. That's so absolutely, it all comes down to that tiny bit of willingness and that willingness, you know, to not be afraid, to allow the Holy Spirit to use us in whatever, you know, that greater purpose is. And the ego will want to hide and, yeah. you know, hide out in any way that it can. It'll capitalize on our fears and say, oh, nope, you know, don't do that, you know, not safe. And yet when we feel that movement within to speak, to step out in whatever way, we have opportunities to get used to honoring that voice and stepping.
Right. To into, connect.
Yeah, absolutely.
To connect.
Definitely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, everybody, for your sharing. That was awesome. I love hearing from you all. Let's keep reading. We have a few pages left. So I'm at the very top now of page 1832. Right. Okay. In addition to inviting the Holy Spirit into their relationship, they were also accepting His goal for their relationship. For all they knew, they were simply setting the goal of getting along with each other and with their colleagues. But inside this goal was nested a far loftier one, the goal of reaching God together. Quote, "For you have chosen but the goal of God from which your true intent was never absent," end quote. Again, they didn't understand they had done this. Quote, "You do not even realize you have accepted the Holy Spirit's purpose as your own," end quote. But there was a part of their minds that understood perfectly well, another quote, The Holy Spirit's purpose was accepted by the part of your mind the ego knows not of. No more did you. I have to read that quote one more time. That's so good. The Holy Spirit's purpose was accepted by the part of your mind the ego knows not of. No more did you. So the spiritual content of Helen and Bill's joining was that they were responding to the Holy Spirit's call and inviting him and his goal into their relationship. This content then led to a series of far-reaching spiritual results. The key result, the source of all the rest, was that the Holy Spirit entered the relationship on a deep level and on that level transformed it. At the heart of this transformation was him replacing their old goal with his new one. And the quote is, the Holy Spirit wastes no time in introducing the practical results of asking him to enter. At once, his goal replaces yours. I want to read that quote one more time. The Holy Spirit wastes no time in introducing the practical results of asking him to enter. At once, his goal replaces yours. No longer was the relationship about each of them laying hold of a private treasure of specialness. Now it was about both of them reaching the altar of holiness together. Although this happened on an unconscious level, it was not without effects on the surface. One of those effects was the series of visions and psychic experiences that Helen had in the summer of 1965. Another was the appearance of Jesus's voice in her mind in October of that year saying, "This is A Course in Miracles, please take notes." This means the Course itself was a visible effect of the Holy Spirit entering the relationship. Indeed, Jesus describes the Course as an explicit answer to their invitation to the Holy Spirit. And the quote is, "He heard. Has he not been very explicit in his answer? Can you deny that he has given a most explicit statement?" These life-changing effects showed that the Holy Spirit's entering was not just on paper, it was very real. I want to pause real quick here. We still have a few, okay, well, I have plenty of time to finish up the reading, but I'm feeling moved to just do a quick share before I forget. So there's some beautiful quotes in here. The Holy Spirit wastes no time in introducing the practical results of asking him to enter. At once, his goal replaces yours. And once, you know, Helen and Bill invited Spirit in without having any idea that that's what they did, all these shifts started taking place. Helen had those psychic experiences that summer, the Course began, and aren't we lucky for it? I just felt moved to just share that in some circumstances, we might feel like we've invited the Holy Spirit in, but nothing is changing. And this, again, is another place where we need to resign as our own evaluator, because if we get caught in thinking that it should look different or feel different or be different than what it is, that, in my experience, is just the ego reinforcing itself, because it's taking you down the road of resisting what's happening versus just allowing and moving through, instead of like the ego energy, which is to, like, you know, put up that fight and try to say that things should be different than they are. I've had a couple of experiences that are coming to mind where I've been in some type of intense situation, some relationship related, some not relationship related. And, you know, I've been talking to the Holy Spirit and asking for help, and it seems like things are just still really intense and not shifting. And I can remember then again, moments within, you know, I've already called on the Holy Spirit, but then having moments within those time periods where I so authentically and genuinely was like, Jesus, Holy Spirit, again, whoever you want to call on, I don't know anything. I don't know how to handle this. And then shortly after that, really deep willingness to have something divinely intervene, shifts started taking place. And the reason that I'm sharing this is because in the interim, even if it seems like we do that and nothing happens, this is where we need patience. This is where we need to hold steady. And this is where we need to trust that, you know, our learning is again within our curriculum on a day-to-day basis. And if that curriculum feels really difficult and really intense, we have to trust on even if it's just like that tiny little mustard seed, we have to trust on some level that we've called on the Holy Spirit. And so, you know, we can be assured that we are on our correct path. It's about holding steady. So I felt moved to just share that. Any comments or thoughts before I keep reading? Hi, Dave.
Sorry to manipulate.
You're not at all. Okay.
I just wanted to share that. What did I want to share?
It'll come back.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the patience and whatnot thing. Because that sometimes it does feel that way, like you're sailing across an ocean that has no end.
Yeah. It feels like nothing's moving. It feels like nothing's shifting. It feels like things like that there's no hope. And that's where patience, that is where like it's an opportunity for patience and for, I want to say trust, because it might feel like, well, why should I have trust if like there's absolutely, you know, no movement or no signs of anything. But we've, as this quote says, where did it go? The Holy Spirit wastes no time in introducing the practical results of asking him to enter. At once, his goal replaces yours. As Earl Raj Purdy has said, I've referenced him before, when the Course says every, always, those big words, you know, all the time, at once, it means it. The Course isn't lying. So at once, his goal replaces yours. We can trust that the goal has been replaced. Things might still be intense. They might still not feel good, but can we hold steady? Can we be patient even despite whatever is showing up in our experience? Thank you, Dave. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I've had a combination of probably three pretty intense happenings in my life in the past couple of weeks. And just as Dave was saying, it felt like I was in that. I was in such a funk and felt abandoned, and then realized I was the one who was abandoning God. God wasn't abandoning me. I was abandoning God. And I made the decision to become more of an observer of the situation, because the ego was just so out of control in my head. Mm-hmm. And that helped to just start observing those thoughts. And then I actually, once I started doing that, and I started doing a lot of page 90s. if I did it once, I did it with every thought that I was observing, I would apply that. And it made such a huge difference. And a feeling of not even caring about the results, not, you know, realization that I don't know what the results should be, but this feeling of, I don't even care how that turns out. And things started turning out much better, especially in one of those situations. I mean, really startling much better. So yeah, patience. And trust in the process.
Patience and trust and being the observer. Paula, thank you for that, because being that observer, this is where the practice of mindfulness meditation has been so incredibly helpful for me in conjunction with A Course in Miracles, because mindfulness is all about kind of like being that witness to your experience, like being fully in your experience. And like we started out with just noticing your soles of your feet touching the floor, it sort of strengthens that observer muscle, so to speak, you know, in our mind. So we can step back and observe and be that witness instead of being in it, because there's a big difference. There's a big difference between like experiencing, observing a thought and experiencing a thought. They're actually like two subtle different things. So I just relate to what you said through my mindfulness work, and being that observer is a great way of stepping into a state where you can practice patience. Thank you for that, Paula. Ah, beautiful. All right, let's keep reading. I can't believe it's 8:43 already. So now we're at the bottom of page 1832. Very bottom. Another important effect of him entering was that Bill and Helen could feel that things were different between them. They could feel that the relationship now had an entirely different purpose. Even if they couldn't see the new foundation on which their relationship stood, they knew that it stood for something higher. And this they found deeply uncomfortable. Indeed, later on, Jesus will call this early phase the period of discomfort. The section we are discussing in this cameo is his counsel on how to deal with that period. The discomfort itself is not that hard to understand. Over 7 years, they had formed a relationship that was all about their goal, in which each hoped to use the other to feel special. Yet now, this same relationship, which was largely unchanged on a form level, had accepted a lofty new goal. This disconnect between the relationship and its goal had two major results. The first result was that the relationship did not fit its new goal. The relationship, this is the quote, "The relationship as it is out of line with its own goal and clearly unsuited to the purpose that has been accepted for it." That's the end of the quote there. It's as if their relationship was a car that ran well enough, yet its designated goal was to fly to the stars. Imagine the thoughts that Helen and Bill may have had at this point. How will we ever get there? Why have a goal that you can literally never reach? What a senseless relationship this is. In this situation, they started blaming each other for their relationship being so discordant with its divine goal, a tendency that Jesus said was likely to continue. Jesus says, "You will find many opportunities to blame each other for the, quote, failure of your relationship." The second result was that, at the same time that the new goal seemed impossibly out of reach, they still desired the old goal. They still wanted that feeling of specialness. The presence of the new goal then essentially said to each of them, "You can't get what you want here." As a result, they were in danger of looking for fulfillment in another relationship that was unabashedly unholy. The quote is, "Now the ego counsels thus, substitute for this another relationship to which your former goal was quite appropriate. You can escape from your distress only by getting rid of each other." All in all, the change that Jesus was celebrating as a glorious rebirth felt to them like a major disruption. And just to pause really quick here, this is how we can't be our own evaluators, right? Jesus celebrates something as a glorious rebirth, and yet they're feeling like it's a major disruption. So our perception is not going to assess this accurately. Okay, to continue. What had been an extremely frustrating relationship had now become a profoundly unsettling one. Rather than going forward, they just wanted to go back. It was crucial that Jesus address this state of affairs. Here, the Holy Spirit wanted to take Helen and Bill on a journey to God, and 5 minutes after getting on the bus, they wanted to get off. In this section, you can feel Jesus doing everything he can to keep them on that bus. In the process, he urged them to do the following things. First, they needed to celebrate rather than bemoan the change that had occurred. They needed to bless their new relationship, not curse it. And the course quote, "Condemn salvation not, for it has come to you." They needed to welcome the new and to look back on the old with clear eyes, not rose-colored glasses. And the quote is, "Forget not now the misery you really found, and do not now breathe life into your failing egos. For your relationship has not been disrupted, it has been saved." Second, rather than changing the goal back to fit their old, unholy relationship, which Jesus says is impossible anyway, they needed to do the exact opposite. Quote, "There is no course except to change the relationship to fit the goal." Third, there was a discrepancy between their new goal and the means they actually employed in the relationship, which boiled down to judging and attacking. This discrepancy could make achieving the goal seem hopeless. They needed to trust, however, that they would be given the proper means, the means that actually fit the goal. The quote is, "Think you not the goal itself will gladly arrange the means for its accomplishment?" Later on, see text chapter 20, part 7, the means would be identified as seeing each other through the eyes of Christ rather than the eyes of judgment. Fourth, they needed to actively resist the temptation to withdraw from this relationship and transfer their investment to another relationship that dangled before them the lure of specialness. Jesus' response to this was blunt. "Hear not this now. Abandon him not now, nor each other. This relationship has been reborn as holy." I'll pause. Actually, we're just going to finish out and then we'll talk about it. We don't have many more paragraphs left. Fifth, they needed to have faith in the bus they were on, so to speak. They needed to have faith in where it was going and that it could actually get there. They needed to have faith in the driver, the Holy Spirit. Have faith in him who answered you. And they needed to have faith in each other, trusting that the other would really do his or her part. Have faith in each other in what but seems to be a trying time. Sixth, rather than blaming each other for failing to live up to the new goal, each needed to forgive the shortcomings and appreciate the genuine contributions the other had made. And the quote is, "And he, the Holy Spirit, has not been lacking in appreciation for all you have done for him, nor does he see the mistakes at all. Have you been similarly grateful to each other? Have you consistently appreciated the good efforts and overlooked the mistakes? Or has your appreciation flickered and grown dim in what seemed to be the light of the mistakes?" Overall, Jesus was asking them to step forward into the new with trust and gladness, in spite of their discomfort. I'm circling that. We're coming back to this. In spite of their discomfort, in spite of the temptation to run back into the arms of the old. As with any major change, even when the infancy of the new is present, it can be hard to resist the siren song of the old. If they could just press forward, he promised them, the rewards would come. Quote, "As this change develops and is finally accomplished, it grows increasingly beneficent and joyous." Indeed, their destination was not just a happy place for the two of them. It was a holy temple from which the blessings of their relationship would be generously bestowed on everyone who draws nigh, as Jesus later describes in this moving passage. The peace he laid deep within both of you will quietly extend to every aspect of your lives, surrounding both of you with glowing happiness and the calm awareness of complete protection. And you will carry its message of love and safety and freedom to everyone who draws nigh unto your temple, where healing waits for him. Two paragraphs left. Jesus's prescriptions for Bill and Helen's relationship appear to make eminent sense. Indeed, they are not so different from the counsel a newly reformed alcoholic might receive. Yet it is well known that Helen and Bill's relationship never really escaped from the period of discomfort. This is truly unfortunate, yet perhaps not as surprising as it may seem. Undoubtedly, many, if not most, holy relationships get mired in that period or get broken off altogether because of it. There's such a bright promise contained in that initial moment of joining, yet laying hold of that promise means laying aside the ego to an unusual degree. And how many are willing to do that? But there is one cause for genuine celebration here. Even though Helen and Bill didn't reach that place of glowing happiness together, the temple they built still stands, and countless thousands still draw nigh unto it to receive the healing that waits for them. And that must be referring to the Course. So I know we just read a lot, but there's a few things I want to highlight. So the bulk of what we just read were these different results, this first through, I think, sixth things that Helen and Bill needed to do for their new relationship, like celebrate rather than bemoan the change, change their goals for the relationship, forgive the shortcomings in one another, have faith. The piece that I really want to highlight here, and this relates to what we have been saying already, with patience, with holding steady, and with trusting that we are making progress even when we don't think we are. It talked about this period of discomfort. We read this word discomfort a few different times, and I'm in the middle of page 1835 when I said I wanted to highlight this. It says, overall, Jesus was asking them to step forward into the new with trust and gladness in spite of their discomfort. So no matter the discomfort that we feel, we can still say yes to the Holy Spirit. We can still say yes to a plan that far extends beyond our, you know, our frame of reference and our thought system in spite of the discomfort. I feel in my own journey with A Course in Miracles, I wanted to run away from the discomfort into the Course. That's what I did for the first 12 years of my studying A Course in Miracles. I literally would feel uncomfortable with anxiety. I would run to the book and find something that helped me feel better. And when I felt better, I'd kind of just go back to doing what I was doing. Nothing wrong with that, but I plateaued with the Course. And I wound up with a massive anxiety episode 12 years later because the discomfort I realized I needed to stop running from. I needed to be with the discomfort, with Holy Spirit, and look at it and look into it and do some guided journaling about it to try to, you know, unearth, to sort of exhume, you know, what that discomfort was about. We can learn a lot by staying in the discomfort. Discomfort is something that we've talked a lot about if anybody is involved in the Love Lens conversations and just the need when we're talking about issues surrounding race and racism to be able to stay in the discomfort and not run. I'm really learning just that there's so much value and healing and growth that can come out of our discomfort. So I just really wanted to highlight that. That's a big takeaway for me from this reading, is about that period of discomfort and trusting that it is part of the process, that even if it's there, we can still trust that it is part of our process and our learning curriculum. I just said a lot. Anybody want to chime in? Hi, John. I saw those thumbs. Comments or questions, anything else that stood out to you? I also, you know, one thing that does stand out to me at the very end, when it says the promise in that initial moment of joining means laying aside the ego to an unusual degree. And I feel like to lay aside the ego means that we have to have honesty and we have to have transparency and we have to be willing to take responsibility and like out our ego, not necessarily to the world, but at least to yourself and to Holy Spirit. And by being honest, you know, about like, oh yeah, just had that judgmental thought, or oh yeah, would like that person to suffer, or whatever it may be, when we own it, the ego can't hide anymore. That's where it loses its power. So calling out the ego is a good thing. That helps us lay it aside. Anybody have any? Hey, Dave.
I wanted to ask Paula what she did to get into that observer role she was talking about. Mm.
Every time, you know, an attack thought would come into my mind, I would shift to page 90. I must have decided wrongly because I'm not at peace. And when you, sometimes I have to say it, I have it memorized and I have to say it over and over, but I'm telling you, not all that long. It doesn't take all that long. And the Holy Spirit just kicks in. A lot of times, when I'm walking at the beach, it's really good to be in an environment that is conducive to the Holy Spirit. And I find nature to be the best place. So a lot of times if I'm very upset about something, I will get to the beach and start that walk. And I always get wonderful results.
So...
It's that willingness we were talking about.
Right, right. Well, many people, when they talk about getting into the observer role, talk about just observing their thoughts without experiencing them, and so to speak.
But the problem there is you can't observe them if you're still in that awful anxiety and anger. So you've really got to shift out of that before you can become the observer with the Holy Spirit.
And that's where what Paula just said about, like, you know, going for a walk at the beach, that's, my words are like, it helps me to change my physiology in some way, usually by walking, like doing something to, it's like, you need an interruption. I need an interruption. Yes. From the rumination and like the obsessive like loop that I could get into. I need an interruption to that can help me step back and be like, oh, this is, you know, to be more of an observer rather than be in it.
Exactly.
So that interruption, whether it's, again, my top interruptions are going for like a brisk walk in the summertime, jumping in the ocean, because being in water is like, you know, a totally different experience. Those are probably my top two, but
jumping on my trampoline.
Yoga. I have a fitness trampoline that I joke around with my counseling class. I'll tell them I found the cure for depression and they're like, what is it? And then I like jump. You can't be sad when you're jumping on a trampoline. And I'm completely kidding, but, some way of having an interruption, and it can lift you. It can help step into that observer mode.
Yeah. Yeah. Distraction or interruption.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Paula, do you remember the page number? Page 90 is an FIP. Is it two?
It's 224.
224. I wrote it somewhere on my wall and I can't even see it. Page 224 in the CE is the same prayer that we're referencing, which is page 90 in FIP. Page 90 is just so much easier. So 224. Oh, thank you, Paula. Thank you, Dave. All right. So we're at the top of the hour. Any like really quick final comments or questions? Are we good?
I actually think it's on page 229.
229? Uh-huh. I'll go there really quick and confirm. I had it on my wall and I have so many.
Yeah, I know. I wrote it on page 90 in my
book.
You got
it.
Page 90 is so ingrained.
Yeah. It starts on page. Thank you.
You're correct. It's page 229. I'm sorry. Yeah. It looked like a four to me.
229 to 230. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Awesome. All right. Cool. I'm seeing some people who are mentioning the manual for teachers next. Was that Sundari?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that page 90 isn't bad either.
In the CE? Oh, good. Oh, that's a good one too. Of course, I have to read that really quick. The prayer on this page is, know first, this is fear. Fear arises from lack of love. The only remedy for lack of love is perfect love. Perfect love is the atonement. So that is good too.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Paula.
Awesome. So maybe I'm seeing from some of you in the chat, maybe we will read the manual for teachers next when we're done with the cameo soon. So, all right. I'm just pausing and taking you all in. Thank you so much for being here. I love you all. Thank you for sharing the space, for holding the space, for sharing, for being present. And we are holding hands and helping each other along this path. And I'm so grateful we don't have to do it alone. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Corinne. I love you all.
Have
a great week.
You too.
Bye-bye. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.